This is session number 326, recorded on December 17th, copyright 2010, New Grandview Incorporated, all rights reserved. And we're starting at 7.04 p.m. Hawaii time. Greetings, Ion.
Howdy.
Howdy. Now, I'll just turn the lights off here and come down. Now, we had an interesting event happened today. Our old buddy, remember that? And a side dish of Captain Beefheart. Remember that phrase? Or Captain Beefheart on the side when we're talking about Zappa.
Mm-hmm.
You recall that? Well, just a second. Don Van Vliet is the real name of Captain Beefheart. Or the registered name. He made an exit this morning on December 17th. And, of course, we would naturally ask whether that was to the Guff or to a parallel world or... All right, well, he died of, they say in the newspaper, complications of multiple sclerosis.
Yeah. Huh.
Okay, so the body, how many... Don Van Vliet's are there for the purpose of public knowledge? I mean, there are many of all of us, right? Is that correct? There are many of all of us.
Not necessarily. Not enough to say it for everybody. So.
All right. So did
granted,
Don?
There are multiples of many, but not multiples of all.
Right. Right.
Get that? See, it's tricky. It's that tricky too, Bob. The things that are the established points are those points, but rarely are they every single time without fail or exception.
Yeah, so is it a sign of someone being ascended that there are multiples of them? They're ascending or ascended, there are multiples of them?
That's a stretch. That's a stretch as too, because let me tell you why. This is great. You've hit the mother load here right out of the start.
Yeah.
Just because you start on the path of ascension, you remember you were ascended and you descended to less thanness. So guess what? You can then also, on your process of ascension, descend back to less thanness if you chose to.
Descend back to less thanness.
Yes, go back to the little man.
Okay, wait a minute. I missed a point. If you've... You were ascended once.
You are ascended.
Right.
And you separate yourself from God, from your power, and you are descended.
Right.
If you have the ability and the power to do that, then on your new path of ascension, you
right.
could also decide, you know what, this is, I don't want her, you can have her, she's too fat for me. I'm going back to Harlem and live with the regular folks. You can choose that as well.
Okay, but how does multiples of yourself come into this?
You made the point. Your question was, if you're in the ascension process, is that the telltale sign of multiplicity of you?
Can you be going back to less thanness, descending, and have multiples of yourself?
No.
So it seems to be favored on the ascending process.
Do.
Right.
That's key. But now, don't pin the tail on the donkey yet, because there are some free radicals that are not being attributed to your conversation. But from your place of asking, that's as close to a good answer as you're going to get from there. But please make note. Please put a postcard. Please make a billboard. That'll change as you go further.
Right, because... You can be ascending. You don't necessarily make multiples of yourself or become
exactly.
aware of them.
Exactly. Very, very good. Very good. But if we start down that rabbit hole, you'll never get anywhere. So we got to leave it at some point of attraction, and then as it develops, enhances itself, then so shall our answer.
Right. So we've heard there are presently.
Something right there, by the way. You got that, didn't you?
Oh, say it again then, or I think I got it.
You did.
The...
You did.
Okay.
That just as your gooder questions are unfolding, so are our bestest answers becoming.
Mm. And there was something in that last bunch of clauses that was significant, or the whole pattern was significant?
The whole pattern.
Yeah, I got that. No,
now, you got the answer to, you can't know nothing, you can't get nothing, you can't get nowhere. Well, that's just because you only get as far as you're asking.
That's right. Okay, so.
Goody for Bobby.
Yes. So, considering, so we would ask if Don Van Vliet had developed multiples of himself while in this present Meatsack existence when he was known as Captain Beefheart.
No.
No. So it was just one. Now, that
barely
body.
One.
Barely one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I remember talking to Captain Beefheart through Ion or about him maybe a year or so ago, and he had come from another world. That was established.
Okay.
Now, the fact he came from another world, did he begin to go back to that other world or go to other worlds over the last, say, 20 years he was rumored to be ill and was relatively reclusive?
Went back home.
He went back home 20, many years ago.
Well, what you say, this is how you would say it. He didn't make residency in anywhere. He was lots of bumping around.
Right.
He was bumping from world to world to world to world.
Even while here in what apparently was a meat sack known as Captain Beefheart.
Well, no, because he was reclusive. There'd be years nobody'd see or peep out of him.
That's right. So that would be,
literally.
Yeah, that's right. Well, he actually gets out of the music business about 1980, 81, 82, and then he goes into an apparent painting career, but nobody sees him much, except for
or much
management.
Of his work.
That's right. It just showed up in galleries. So,
rare.
So that's right. So that's the period when he's not staying in Lancaster or up in, I think it was Trinidad. These places where he's rumored to be living, he wasn't necessarily there, confined to there. Right, okay. So, did he have multiple sclerosis?
We don't even know what that is.
Well, you know, humans have a name for a condition. Did he have health problems that kept him bedridden?
No.
Did he have health problems that kept him in a wheelchair, say?
No.
So, he was functioning gloriously all these years?
Oh, well. He may have got climbed in that wheelchair and rolled himself around when he was going somewhere, but he was buck dancing around with his little air guitar anytime he wanted to.
Right. He for public consumption, I know he showed
yeah.
up in the early 90s in Los Angeles at galleries or something.
All willowed up and withered and dried up. And blah, 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 blah.
So that was consciously faked by him. And his wife Janet knew that, knew what he was doing.
We don't like that. We don't. He's like you, Bob. He has the right to be wrong. He can run his world any way he wants to. And we're not saying that it's a fake. It's just allowed you to see is what he wanted you to see.
He was an actor, so he played that role at that point. Yeah.
We were told once that Muhammad Ali did that sort of activity to keep himself...
Yeah, he pretended he had Parkinson's or whatever
yeah.
it is. That what was that? The shaking disease? Is that
I think it was Parkinson's.
Yeah, did Muhammad Ali fake having Parkinson's or act
well,
it out in public?
Okay. Now that's
That's another topic.
Well, no, it's fine. We can do it fast and we won't lead you down the primrose path. He did have Parkinson's. But nothing to the scale and the degree that it's laid out. Meaning, he had early onset Parkinson's, but it was not nearly as debilitating as it appeared when you would see him out.
And his motive for doing that, we were told, was to have a bit of privacy and be able to move around freely.
Yep.
And so he did that. And
his daughter's running around trying to get publicity. It's so hysterical.
Right now?
Uh-huh.
Okay. So back to Don Van Vliet. known as Captain Beefheart. So his wife was aware of the acting Don was doing.
Yes.
Did his wife enjoy parallel worlding with him?
Yes.
All right. I remember Don telling me, or I read it somewhere, this would be 30 years ago, 40 years ago, late 60s, early 70s, she worked for Manly P. Hall, who was an encyclopedist of the occult, I think. You know, he did books. So she would have been interested or become acquainted with this esoteric forms of experience through maybe Manly P. Hall.
Well, she got exposed to what you're calling the occult and saw the drivel foolishness of it, okay, the silliness of it, and then broke through that and got to the good stuff.
And did she help Don or Don help her?
She helped Don.
But Don already was from another world. Did she...
What, so?
Well, did he not have abilities when he brought from another world?
Yeah, Bob, they get in here and they go dumb as dirt. You get on this plane and you go dumb as dirt. You can't remember your power. You can't remember your God. You let your mind take over and abdicate your throne and lay down and beat yourself in the head with a ball bat and wonder and say, woe is me. I just can't remember ever being happy.
Right. So Janet helped him get out of that mud.
Yeah. Like
okay.
Carolyn does for you, Bub.
That's
in your chart. You can't
fight it. What fucking bullshit is that?
You can't fight it. You can't fight it. It's in your fucking chart. Hey, it's your
Connie
it's your
is
chart.
My Connie is my Pygmalion, okay? Let's face it.
Carrie's on you a pig.
Oink, oink. Oink, oink.
Oink, oink, O-I-N-T. Can't even do the oink correctly.
Yeah, that's it. It's an early day. Rai's going to piss off Issy. We're going to see how this works out. But you've been thoroughly told how this story rolls out, Bob. But luckily, you don't remember, so there you go.
All right, luckily. Okay, so we got Don. He's...
Money, down, money. Bum, 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 wow. Money, bum, ba, dum, bum. That's it.
Hey, you're doing Beefheart. Not bad. The guitar sounds a bit like Zappa, but nah, maybe the wump, bump, bump could be Beefheart.
It's a tiny note.
Yeah, the tiny note. Okay, so... Don... how did his wife, Janet, do some of the painting? Or did he do all his painting? Of the works that we've known the last 15 or 20 years, 30 years.
There ain't much painting, Bob. You're acting like this is voluminous, that there's going to be a gallery with thousands of Beefheart photos. And
well, I went to a gallery in New York City in, you know, late 90s, I think it was. Michael Jenner, whatever his manager was, gallery was. And there was, maybe 10 paintings in there. Something
like
that.
Well, that's not much.
Anyway, he did a few paintings.
That's about the compendium of his work.
Okay, so he didn't spend much time painting.
Nah, no reason. He was just having fun. He was just tripping, man.
He was just tripping all over the place.
Yeah.
Is he aware of what we're doing with you?
No.
No, he didn't tune into the Ion scene. Now, here's an interesting thing, is that I know that friends of his, Tom Waits, I think Billy, what's that guy, Billy Joe, who's that actor? Billy something Thornton?
Billy Bob.
Billy Bob Thornton, Tom Waits, maybe Bono, PJ Harvey.
Bono.
Obama, okay.
That's Sonny Bono. This is talking about Bono. There is a difference. You know,
okay.
Chaz is dead daddy. That's the one.
Okay, so I heard that that they were phone buddies of Captain Beefheart. You'd get into a friendship where you'd be on the phone with him a lot, and he'd call you, or you'd talk to him every day for a year or two, and then he suddenly cut you off. Is there a reason why, and these people were puzzled apparently, why he would cut them off?
He was just moving on to something more fun.
All right. Would he be trying?
The only reason he ever engaged with any human ever was for a purpose, to serve him. And once that got served, he was done.
Right. Is that what you mean?
Users. They call them users, Bob. You've had exposure with that, haven't you?
Okay, so was he using them in the selfish sense of taking his power, or was there another aspect to it?
Well, you would hope that that'd be the case, but not necessarily so much.
Right.
I mean,
so did Don, in interacting with these people intensely on the phone for a long time, was he trying to teach him something, to how to move to other worlds?
He's never tried to teach anybody anything.
Okay, good.
That was never his job or intention. He's like, if you're waiting on me to teach you something, you're fucked. I ain't teaching you. It ain't my job to teach you nothing.
So what was what would he use people for? What were the kind of things that he'd want to get?
Information. Because, see, as he clicked himself in and out of these reality checks, their sound checks is what they'd call it.
Yes.
It becomes a way to hear yourself talk. Now, he did do that.
You mean he'd find out who someone was happening somewhere in the public outer kingdom world, the media realm or something, and he would interact with them to see what was going on, to get a sense of where he was at in relation to that?
And hear his perspective of what he was trying to chat with them about. Those friends, when you hear them speak about it, they'll say that, you know, we'll get on the phone, I'd talk to him every single day for a year, and we'd talk 15 minutes or 30 minutes or sometimes a couple of hours, and the conversation, I'd have about five sentences, and the rest of it would be him talking.
Yeah, yeah. So he'd use
more to hear himself talk and has some plug-in in this world outside of himself.
So he was trying to hear himself active, but he had to get someone else to activate himself.
Yeah, it works better that way. Otherwise, they think you're crazy.
Right. So,
but you ought to know that, Bob.
Oh, yeah. So does he...
You done pissed off Issy now. It's caveat emptor now, Bob.
She's busy doing her emails. But.
That's right. She's monitoring your butt now, Bob. You done started early.
Okay,
you remember,
so
tomorrow is market day.
Okay. You may never eat again.
We may see how many carrots you don't enjoy this week.
You stop hanging her on, Ion, okay?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Got a non-physical.
Now, did Don understand that declaring with his words was the way he would create?
Well, certainly. And that's the way it was, whether he necessarily realized it or not.
What did he create through his words that he didn't expect that surprised him in his recording career? If you were going to say before the qualifier. Okay.
Pre-qualifier. Yeah. He realized that he's created a lonely paradise of an iconoclast world which had complete segregation for everyone else from everyone else on the planet. And the problem is, he found it to be very, 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 very lonesome experience.
So he was trying to...
He got what he wanted, and then he was pissed because he got it.
Yeah. And would that be... near when he started to get pissed when he finished recording, or in the middle of the 70s, in the middle of his recording career?
He was never happy with it at all. He was always the third man out. Whole career. He never made it anyway.
Yeah, he's always unhappy with the recording career, and that's apparently why he went back to painting, which was his first.
He could never. He was always a bridesmaid, never a bride.
Right.
This is about as much fun as a stick in the eye. I can waste paint on bad canvases easier than this.
Well, when you read books on, what was that last line? We can waste canvases. What did you just say?
Yeah, we can waste canvases and not make money, and it be our real work and not on the heels of someone else's royalty check.
And not make money?
Yeah, because he wasn't making lots of money.
He made good money on his paintings. Sold a few.
Well, that's what we just said. If he's going to be poor, he might as well be poor with paintings that at least is his own headline and not someone under someone else's royalty check.
Okay. So you don't see him making a lot of money through his paintings?
No, he didn't see himself making a lot of money in anything.
Why was that? Because he wanted a lot more?
Amount of money is relative, Bob.
No, but did he want millions and then he felt he had a lot, or he was indifferent to money?
Well, that's relative. That changes.
Yeah.
He thought he wanted things. He'd get those things, and then he realized that's not what he wanted. And then he'd change and change and change and change and change. So all that's relative.
That's true. He changed a lot in his private behavior, in a sense.
Yep.
Yeah. So the book's on him. In the early 60s, he's hanging out with his friends, and he had a naturally good blues voice. So he started singing with the band, and he wasn't trained musically, but he had this great voice, so then he just fell into performing. And he almost got a hit or two in 66, 67. But all that was being a musician by default, I guess you'd say.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what was his main desire, main love? Did he have any particular?
Finding his main desire and his main love.
Whatever it was.
Well, no. You said, what was his main desire and love? And we answered that by looking for his main desire and love. That was his
love.
Kept looking for it. He loved doing that.
It's like chasing a beautiful woman and then not knowing what to do when you catch them.
So he found himself in that situation a lot.
His whole experience.
All right, so why did he come here from another world? Was there a motive, or did it happen by accident?
Oh, no, it was to piss off Casey Kasem.
Who would be an experience he saw coming.
Yes, he wanted the top 40 and never quite got there.
And he wanted to get it on his terms, and he knew that would piss off Casey Kasem.
Of course.
Who's Casey Kasem?
American Top 40. You know, where we count them down every Saturday night for all the top hits of the nation, across the nation.
It's like a later Dick Clark count.
Mm.
Correct, Ian? Later Dick replay of Dick Clark?
Well, maybe a little better than Dick Clark, because Dick Clark was, his was more finite. Casey Kasem only did the top 40.
Okay. So, now, the only book that I know that Captain Beefheart talked about, thought it was great, was Wyndham Lewis's Apes of God. And what's interesting is that when you see a picture of Wyndham Lewis, 1914, in his painter's studio in London, he looks like Don Van Vliet, say, in the mid-60s. They looked like each other. Was there any connection between the two of them, or was that just a coincidence?
Coincidence.
Right. So what did Don find?
It was a nice poke, though. I mean, it was a nice poke, and typically when you hit that kind of poke, you hit something. Mm-hmm. But here, you hit air. That's all
okay.
You hit was air. But it was a good try, though.
Yeah. So what appealed to him in Wyndham Lewis's writing style in the novel Apes of God? That's the one that Don apparently had read to him.
The striking concepts of reality as they were presented. Because it was so absurd when it was written.
That's right.
It grew into a meme, finally. But, boy, it took a while.
You mean Wyndham Lewis's writing?
Well, that's the one you're talking about, isn't it?
Yeah. And basically, he was a painter who wrote his novels describing things as the expert painterly eye would see things.
Yeah. He wrote to sell paintings.
That's right. He wrote to sell paintings, exactly. His essays, his belligerent probings and all that stuff. Yeah, so was Don Van Vliet aware that that's what Lewis was doing and admired that, or just liked the writing?
Nope, and saw it and tried to do the same thing himself.
Okay, so what else can we ask about Don? So, what did he think of Frank Zappa's music?
He tolerated it.
What did Frank Zappa think of Don's music?
There was never a homogeneous relationship there.
Right.
Ever.
I understand that in the last year, Frank Zappa was dying with cancer. Don Van Vliet spoke to him a lot on the telephone. They hadn't maybe talked in years, but they talked a lot the last year of Zappa. What came out of those dialogues? Because apparently Frank was quite delighted with them.
Well, he was the only one hanging around. Zappa didn't have a lot of people chatting him up.
And Don could do it. Don was a good talker.
Well, he was one of the few who actually earned that level or degree of conversation. I mean, they had put up with each other for a while, had they not?
Yes, yes.
Well, then it was like it was a righteous position.
Yeah, for Don.
The side of Beefheart was kind of great fun because it was like, we're going to miss your butt. You always took the lead, and it was always your way or the highway, so take the highway, big boy.
That's Don saying that to Frank.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah,
so,
you won. Now, you won first place, and what's the prize?
So, Don, though, you're saying that Frank wouldn't waste his time with people who couldn't talk on his level. That's what you're saying.
Well, yes, and who was on his level? I mean, you speak of Zappa like everyone was just bowing, trying to lick up his scrotum or something, and there were some that enjoyed it later, but there was no big following.
Right. In other words, there were people didn't like Zappa.
Every time he'd get a group together, then he'd piss them off and alienate them so that they'd hate him equally together. Every time he'd sort of get it together and, you know, had a fan base, I mean, it'd be like Oprah Winfrey getting a show, getting everybody to love Oprah, and then Oprah come out and said, "You bunch of stupid fuckers. I've been riding y'all for all this time. I've got all these people giving me all this money on your backs, and you're so stupid. You showed up every day to watch my drivel so I could make a whole lot of money. Thanks for the fish," and do that every week, and after a little while, ain't nobody going to show up.
All right, so you're saying that's what Frank Zappa did?
Always.
That's right, but when you were discussing, when Frank Zappa came through you when we were talking to Ben Watson, Frank basically said he was intending to piss everybody off every time with his music. That was his intent.
And that's what we just said just now. That was the point.
Right. And so Don understood that about Frank and said, "You did it. You got somewheres with that."
Mm-hmm.
At least he got a name for himself or some
some kind of name. But see, what Don wanted was the fame to go along with that process to actually be significant in the music industry, in the music world.
And he
jumped on the wrong roller coaster.
Whereas he saw Frank did not take advantage of his fame,
right,
of his success.
Well, and that hurt Don.
It hurt. Frank hurt Don.
Well, of course.
Because he was associated with Zappa.
Exactly. Nobody.
Right.
No, if you're not real familiar with Zappa. What's the chances of hell of you figuring out who Beefheart is?
So Don did have a goal in the music industry.
Sure.
What was his goal? What did he want to do with the music business?
He wanted to make money. Bow, 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 bow.
Okay, good. Very good.
I'm sure wasn't doing it for his health.
All right. And so he by being associated with his Frank,
Frank was a shooting star, and the shooting star blew out like a candle in the wind.
Okay. Musicians who worked for Frank, the later musicians in the 80s, 70s, and 80s, they always said they had a great time with Frank. Now that's what they say.
Well, because you did, because it never lasted long enough to go south with Frank.
But he would drop you and move on to something else. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's like, it was great fun. I had a great time. Lasted 8 minutes, but it was great. It was a great experience. So you didn't have many of those to have something to sour you on the whole process.
You didn't have many of those. Say that sentence again.
8 minute engagements to get tired of it all.
Who didn't have the 8 minute engagements?
Anybody.
To get tired of it.
Right. Frank would have a crew come in, and boy, that was the most fun ever. Now gone, you're done. Then somebody, a whole other genre would come in, and that was fun. He'd hook everybody up and get everything together and run, and make up something and row your boat. And before they started the second verse when they'd come in, they were all out in a hole. And then you had the damn Nubian drummer line come to tip-tap out something. And oy, 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 hey, oh, hey, oh, hey. And that lasted about 8 minutes, and that was fun. Okay, now you're out. Then he's got the Tibetan hummers. And then that lasts for about 8 minutes, and that was real fun. It was enjoyable. And it's like, okay, out of here. Let's go next. So you see, the exposure was so vast. He was constantly looking for something that he never could find because he never lasted long enough to know what he'd found.
Because he was motivated by an antisocial theme or strain or feature in himself that basically pissed people off was the prime thing.
Well, he was always, in his world, it was selfishly trying to perfect the tiny note that he never did.
The big note, he called it.
Well, we called it the tiny note because it never got very big, did it?
Right. Okay, so Don dropped out of, he told me back in 1971, basically that he didn't want to be connected to Frank, and then he didn't even understand why David Wally was writing a biography in Zappa. He said, Zappa's a good engineer, but he's not a great musician. So he wanted to distance himself from Frank, and he made some disparaging remarks to Frank in that period, but then he then had to rejoin Frank in 1975 during the Bongo Fury tour, and Beefheart said at that point Frank was the greatest artist alive on the planet at that time, but I guess Don would do that.
Money, down.
Okay, yeah. So
that's how that worked. Or you could do it like Liza Minnelli. Money makes the world go around, the world go around, the world go around. Money makes the world go around. Or so Frank Zappa says.
Okay, so in the last year, Don, he knew he could talk, he could chat with Frank and make Frank feel not so lonely. Did Frank feel lonely like Don did?
Well, no, Frank got blown out, but he was still looking selfishly for the tiny note.
Whereas Don was looking for paradise, he gets it, but then he doesn't like it.
He was happy. He took great solace in Frank's position.
In the result that Frank ended up in.
In the decline of Zippity Doodah.
The decline of Zappa.
Yeah.
He took great comfort in that. What kind of comfort would that be?
See, I told you, dumb fuck, he was going to die some nasty.
Okay, but Don himself was stuck in his loneliness. He found himself lonely. He didn't get stuck in that emotion, you're saying, now.
No. He'd talk to somebody that would listen to him talk for a year or so, and then he'd move on to the next one, and then move on to the next one. He really didn't notice. It was working all right, still working all right for him, Bob.
That's right. He did. Yeah, he talked to anybody on the phone. I talked to him many times on the phone. He's like, I'll talk to anything that moves. If it gives me a chance for me to hear myself.
Just like at the Chinese whorehouse. Me love you long time.
Yep, that's right. You've mentioned that line many times.
Good. You still haven't heard it yet, but we.
Okay, so what was Don? Did Don have an intellectual theory? Frank claimed he had a theory, a philosophy of physics, and.
Unquenchable theory.
Did Don have intellectual theories or a system he would propagate, or was it just get back to the animals?
Well, the propagation was in the animal world, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that was sort of the point.
Why did he identify with animals and whales, and basically like was a nature boy or a wolf man?
But no nature boy, Ric Flair. There wasn't no pretty boy about this thing now.
He's more of a wolf man.
Yeah, wolf man. It's kind of like they don't talk back, and they have their own ways, and they don't care what you think about their ways.
That's what he liked.
Yep.
Yeah, so zombie wolf.
Well, it's independence and interdependence. Because he'd tell stories about getting a deer or something like that that you feed and take food to, that they'll finally learn that you're going to bring the food, and so they're not threatened by you. So you can have an interdependence on that, because he liked the interaction and they liked the grub.
Great. And he kept it simple. It was simple.
Oh, absolutely. Well, everything, yeah.
What is he? Does it satisfy him?
Well, you know how that critique world worked for him always.
Right.
They didn't know, you don't know me. How you be writing all this stuff about me? You don't know me. You don't know what I was trying to accomplish. You don't know why I was there. Blah, 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 blah. Yes, I was at Woodstock. Blah, 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 blah. All that chit chat.
Right, there's, I saw an article, here it is, Alexis Petridis, The Guardian, Saturday, December 18th, Don Van Vliet, also known as Captain Beefheart, was mysterious, alchemical, inexplicable, and unrepeatable. Now, when Don reads that, if he hasn't already, what would he make of that? Mysterious? Would he like that appellation?
Sure.
Alchemical?
Well, he wouldn't know what that meant.
Okay. Inexplicable?
Certainly.
He'd like that. And unrepeatable?
But he'd like it just because they weren't smart enough to get him.
Right. So he liked being mysterious. He liked being...
Well, if you're confusing mysterious with elusive.
Or inscrutable. He liked being inscrutable?
Yes, but he enjoyed elusive more than all of those combined.
That's ELUSIVE.
Mm-hmm.
Elusive. Now, early critics and friends like Landon Winter wrote articles on him in the early 70s, and they discussed his apparent ESP. He'd know the phone would ring before it rang, and then he'd know who was calling, things like that. And Langdon told me a couple other stories where he exhibited his ESP. Did he have some kind of sensitivity like that?
Well, yeah, Bob, but that's not too atypical. It's just whether you engage it or not.
He had no problem engaging it. And
no.
Would that
and
be...
And he saw that as normal.
Right. Now, did he have that before he met Janet?
Yes.
That was naturally activated.
Well, now, but now you know what we're going to say there. Everybody does.
Right, but he would demonstrate it without worrying about what people thought of it before he met Janet.
A bit, yeah.
Yeah. Did Janet encourage him to do a little more?
No.
No?
She didn't want him to get too far out because it might hurt the world that he was trying to build.
Okay. What, that was trying to be make it in the top 40, make
she
it in the mainstream.
She gave a damn more than he gave a damn.
About making it in the mainstream music world.
Right, because she knew she had to sleep with him, and he would, and the more depression he got from not being understood as an artist made it rougher to make the next non-popular record.
So, which musician did Don... What was a really dear musician for Don in his taste for music? Who was somebody he really liked and maybe people didn't know? Didn't know they liked.
Well, it's kind of odd, but he really dug Elvis Presley.
Okay. All right.
You're saying okay, but now that's a stretch, Bob.
Yeah, well, I know that Frank said he didn't think much of Elvis, and they were friends at the time of Elvis's, you know, main popularity in the mid and late '50s.
Frank, we're not talking about Frank. The only reason Frank didn't like Elvis is because he's like, well, he's just running around shaking his moneymaker, and people are he was not a very good artist, and people are giving him money checks for movies, and, you know, he made the big time.
Yeah, he thought it was mediocre. Frank thought it was mediocre, but Elvis...
And
but
yet, people are still ripping their panties off, throwing them at this crazy little goober.
Right, whereas Don, it liked Elvis's music and movies, is what you're saying.
More music than movies, but...
Yeah, he liked his music, and did Frank know that Don liked Elvis?
No.
No, Don kept that to himself.
Well, that was your question, wasn't it? Not everybody would know.
Right. What artist, what painter was an influence on Don or that he liked
Pollock.
And thought about? Jackson Pollock.
Jackson Pollock. Because he was a free spirit. He liked that free reign position.
His behavior, his personality.
Yeah, he's wild as a March hare.
His drummer... John French, known as, Drumbo? Trumbo or something. John French just put out a huge book, voluminous book, detailing the agony that the original band around Cap'n Beefheart that made the album Trout Mass Replica, the terrible, almost Manson-like, Charles Manson cult-like control Beefheart had over the band and the pain he put them through. What comment would you make about that experience that John French had with Don?
Delicious, delicious.
He liked it.
Well, they absolutely, because then at the end of the day, he's like, you know, you son of a bitch, if I hadn't been as tough on you as you had, you never would have made, nobody would have bought your damn book in the first place.
Well, this is 40 years later.
Well, he's still kicking.
So Don... Yeah, what does Don think of that kind of book that portrays him as a mad psychotic leader, a genius,
genius, there you go, that's right, that's exactly how he sees it.
He's a genius. He sees himself as a genius, so he has no guilty conscience.
I figured it out and you didn't.
He's proud
of... you're having to write about it, and I'm not.
Okay, well, that's a good way to end here. All right. Thanks, Ion. We'll move on to other things.